This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
A couple things to begin with. I don't come to you as the be-all, know-all expert on team leadership, and hopefully we're starting with the workshop a little bit late, but hopefully we'll have a little bit of time at the end to have some interaction if you have thoughts or critiques. How many times have you been in a meeting, you know someone is not agreeing with the issue at hand, whatever it is you're discussing, and maybe it's because they want the meeting to end, maybe because they don't want to put their ideas out there in front of people, whatever it may be, but they're not really willing to express what they are feeling. How do you get them to speak? Or, similarly, if you have a team member who's sitting there and they're having a conversation with their neighbor, not really engaging, or they're texting, or whatever they might be, and you know they're not really, again, part of the conversation, what do you do with that? Do you confront them? Are you willing to call them out? Should you call them out? And again, it probably depends on who your team members are as to whether that's an issue or not. Welcome, come in. Or, different scenario, your organization is gearing up for a staff retreat. About 4 days before you take your entire faculty away for the weekend to a cabin or whatever it might be, you end up realizing you have two staff members approach you to talk about significant relational issues that are present in the organization, in the team. What do you do? This is actually a real scenario that happened to us a couple weeks ago, and I'll come back and talk about that a little bit more. So, in particular, some of these staff members are saying, you know what, are we even going to be able to have the ability to share with each other with the relational issues that are present with our group right now? What do you do in that situation? And if you're the leader, do you just simply hope the issue goes away? Or do you address it head on? How do you effectively communicate what really matters? Here I'm going to go a couple different places. So I'm not sure who all of you are, if you're mission leaders, if you're here as a business owner, or whatever you might be, but how do you effectively communicate what matters to your employees or team members so that an employee may endanger a customer because they're not following the practices they're supposed to be following? This can be, you know, working at a meat counter, somehow the meat gets contaminated, people get sick. What do you do? Because you know that person didn't follow the proper protocol. Or you have a teacher who, I live in the city, so you have a teacher who jaywalks, takes the students across the street when they're not supposed to, or where they're not supposed to. What do? You're thinking of making a major change in the organization, but you're fairly certain that there are a number of employees or even board members who may be resistant to the idea. How do you decide if it's the right thing to do? And then how do you convince people to get on board, or how do you convince them to buy into this? So, what is a team member? So there's a variety of answers. This could be an employee. This can be an ordained person who's a team member. So teams can be, again, in the workplace. They can be a leadership team at church, volunteers in the mission field, board member, a board setting. There can be a variety of ways in which we find teams. Why use teams? One of the reasons I get excited about using teams is I find it's a tremendous way to find greater perspective. When I am the leader in our organization there in Baltimore, but it's very helpful for me to get perspective of other people. And that's where if you have a team leadership model, it's a great way for you to get additional input and hopefully actually move forward with greater wisdom, with more people actually giving input, have a better sense of even what's happening in the organization with a team. Wherever you have teams, and probably wherever you have people, there are complications. I'm going to be referencing Dr. Henry Cloud a number of times this morning. In reference to solving a problem, Dr. Henry Cloud, who wrote a number of books about boundaries, the book that I'm referring to a lot this morning is Boundaries for Leaders. He says, the truth is that there are about 5 correct plans. There are a lot of ways to get there. The real problem is getting the people to do what it takes to make the plan work. That is where you win or lose. It's always about the people. And this is where the leader needs to formulate the issues for the team and figure out how do we actually move forward with the issues that we have. So, again, I don't know that I feel like I have all the answers. I'm very much learning what this process means. In fact, I I thought about asking my team members that are part of the team whether I'm qualified to actually talk about this. And I'm guessing I'd get a variety of responses from them. And again, the staff retreat that we took the staff away for the weekend, I'll come back and talk about that in a couple minutes, but that's a situation where I realized very quickly that I was way in over my head and didn't know exactly what to do. So I don't have all the answers. Again, I welcome your insights or critiques at the end. I'm going to suggest there are four critical elements in having a strong team, and I'm using the acrostic team. One of the first things that you have to have is you have to have a sense of trust. The people on the team need to trust you as a leader. Secondly, the people need to trust each other. If they're not engaging, there's probably a trust issue that's present. So trust is one of the things that has to be present if you want to have an effective team. The second thing, TE, so engagement. The other thing that is critical on a team is if you want it to work well, you can't have just one person talking, or you might as well have a one-person team. You need to get the people involved. How do you do that? That's part of where we're going to go. The third thing that you need is you need to affirm the people. Find ways to help them do better at what they're doing and even encourage them where they currently are. The third thing, this doesn't quite fit with the as well with the other words, but the fourth thing is mission. Being very clear about what our mission is and having a clear purpose that the whole team can get behind and march in the same direction. Having a clear purpose. Mission. So, starting with trust. As a leader, one of our jobs is to communicate. And how do we develop this trust? Part of it is being very clear about what we believe needs to happen, expressing that to people, and making sure that we are letting them know what's going on in our minds. One of the things that I have found is it's critical to explain, if there's changes that are happening in the organization, being able to explain to people why this happened. Sometimes as leaders, we sit back and think, okay, so in order to change this problem or fix this situation, here's where we need to go. And we can think through a number of scenarios and figure out where our organization needs to go. However, if you just give the team members the conclusion, they're like, where did you come up with that idea? But if you can explain to them the steps in your mind as to how you got there, why are we doing this? That's a big part of communication, being able to tell them how you got to the place where you got to in your mind. Very basic part of communication is before a meeting happens, sending an agenda and actually preparing people for discussion. And sometimes you need to formulate the issues ahead of time and ask for responses later. Our administrative team met, this happened a couple months ago, but I have two teams basically. So our entire staff makes up one team. We have about 16 people on the staff. And then we have an administrative team that of four of us, actually five of us, that make more of the bigger decisions for our organization. So we met because my wife and I were trying to figure out what to do with one of our staff members. And the question is whether I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but there was a significant issue that needed to be addressed. And there was basically two ways that we could address it. So I didn't feel like I could actually communicate this to the administrative team effectively via email. So I just told them, look, we need to meet, and gave them a one-line explanation as to what we're meeting about. At the meeting, I told them, here's the issues, and told them the three or four connecting underlying issues that are happening, and said, so we talked about it for about an hour. I said, I want a response from you tomorrow morning. So actually giving people a chance to respond. And if you send an agenda ahead of time, hopefully you can put the issues in there so that people can actually be thinking about them and actually add value to the discussion that happens. But sometimes the issues can't really be communicated ahead of time. But again, allowing people to think about what's being said and what the issues are so that they can actually make a good decision and help in the process of making a decision. Communicating your way through changes, getting the team to engage with the issues. This is where, again, the piece of transparency is where this is where you need to communicate with people what's happening in your mind and give them the steps of how you got to where you think you need to go. But another question there is, as we're communicating, as we're trying to build trust as leaders, how do we prepare for a significant organizational change? Because sometimes you do have to change direction because you realize that God is, either issues are forcing you to change or God is calling you to something different. How do you communicate that to people, especially if you know it's going to be rather difficult? And I'll give one example of that. Our board, the board that oversees the school there in Baltimore, we met, or actually, the board chairman and I, we were discussing the process of buying a building. So the building that we started our school with was fairly small, about 3,000 square foot. And so in late 2014, we started talking, November 2014, we started about talking about the process. Okay, over the next 2 years, we want to purchase a building and work on renovating it. And so for the year 2015, our plan was to actually start getting information out to people and start fundraising so that by late 2015, we could actually look at purchasing a building. We're looking at purchasing a warehouse because there just wasn't much available in our neighborhood. So we started that process, and we had actually talked a little bit about this at our the board chairman and I were talking about this. Our goal was to go to our January meeting and tell the board, look, here's the direction we're going. And again, it was going to be a significant change with a new building. The board was already very familiar with the fact that we didn't have much space in our building. We needed to do something. But we were planning to plan to give them a process as to how we saw, we believe we should move forward. Anyway, we were looking at buildings, just very generally looking at warehouses, other buildings in the neighborhood that were available to try and figure out, so we could give information to the board to talk about what kind of funds we need to raise and what the process is going to look like. Anyway, in that process, one of the things that happened is we found a building a block away that had been previously a school. And we're like, oh, it's for sale. And it's not for sale a year from now, 2015, when we were planning to look at purchasing something. And then we're going to spend another year remodeling it. No, it was available now. Oh, okay, this is fascinating. So mid-December, we called an emergency board meeting because we're like, the property's there. We're not sure how long to stay on the market. It was undervalued for what it was. And the board met and said, okay, what are we going to do? And we wrestled back and forth quite a bit trying to figure out, is this the right direction to go or not? When we had our board meeting, it was right around Christmas when we met. Until we finalized the fact that, yeah, we think we're going to go ahead and try to purchase this. And we told God, look, we put a fleece in front of him in a sense and said, if we can raise, I forget exactly, 25% of the purchase price up front, then we would proceed with purchasing the building. If we can do that by our next board meeting, which by the time we got information out to people, that was about 3 weeks away. And it was a couple days before New Year. So not a real great time to advertise, because if you're looking for people who are going to write larger checks, they usually have written them earlier in December. And 3 weeks. And by way of comparison, we were looking for about $150,000. That's usually what we raise in a year's time. And we were looking to do this. We said to God, look, if you want us to have this building, then we want to see this money in 3 weeks. So we all, we thought, yeah, this is probably not going to happen. At any rate, so I'm kind of distracting from where I started with this, but we did end up getting the money 3 weeks later. We actually ended up, by the end of the board meeting that Saturday, ended up with $180,000. So God very clearly told us that, yes, we want you to proceed with purchasing this building. So again, changes in the future. So our goal was to go to the board and say, look, here's some changes we need to make. Here's the direction we would like to go. But then God threw us a curveball, which he does sometimes. But it's still good for us to plan into the future and actually try to bring, in this case, we were trying to bring the board members along and get them on board with making changes and purchasing a new building. Trust as a team. Actually, I need to say one other thing about... So, trust as a team. One of the things that you need to sometimes work on, if people are not talking in your team meeting and you want them to, one of the issues may be the fact that they don't trust each other. that they don't believe that their ideas will be respected by the people who are listening to them. So it's critical for us to think about how to have that respectful dialogue. And so at our administrative meetings, team meetings, we've actually talked about what is the kind of culture that we want for our administrative team meetings, and talk about the culture of our team. We also do this with our larger staff, but in a slightly different way. But we actually talk about what are the ways in which we can get more people to say what you're thinking. Because I tell them again and again, as a team leader, I want their input, I value their input, because I don't want to make decisions and then force them to carry them out. I really want their input so that we can actually make better decisions as a team, as a group. So inviting their discussion, but sometimes, again, we need to talk about what is the culture of our team, what's missing, what needs to change. And sometimes you have people on the team who are feelers, who kind of have a sense of what is happening, what other people's feelings are. So sometimes it's good to have a conversation with them. So why aren't people talking? What am I doing wrong? What can be done differently in our meetings to actually engage people more? So be willing to talk about that. The other thing that we as leaders need to do is be as honest with people as we can about the issues and get as many of the issues on the table as we can. So giving people as many details as we can so that they can actually engage with the with difficult conversations. And actually, one example of this was not in a team meeting, but it was based on team culture. Going back to our relationship question, we met with one of the relationship culture pieces that we had that we had in our team, still kind of present, is there was a clique that was present. And I'm guessing many of you who are in ministry, you know what that's like. You have several ladies in this case who were very close friends, which can be a good thing. But if they're close friends to the point of excluding other people and actually hurting the other people, that can be a problem. And that's the point at which we were. We actually met with one of the ladies who was part of this clique and actually talked about what can maybe be done differently and encouraged her to do things differently. Part of our encouragement was to her was the fact that we're hearing from too many of our team members they're concerned about the way they are being treated by you and your friends. And so our appeal to them was, again, trying to put the issues on the table and actually telling them, here's what's going on. What can we do about this? And trying to get to a different place. But again, that's part of being able to build that trust. One of the things that we find important is investing social time. So some of our meetings, a lot of the larger team meetings that we have with our entire staff, we often eat supper together because we meet in the evening. And it takes extra time. We actually spend a lot of time laughing during our meetings too. Which means that we sometimes go on bunny trails. But a lot of times people are more comfortable in that kind of setting. And our goal is to get some business accomplished, but we allow other things to happen as well. And part of the reason we have the food there is it's a way for people to naturally just sit there, you know, eating food together, conversing with each other. That's a critical part of being able to build trust, is having that time of being able to socialize. I'll come back to a little bit more of that later if I have time. I apologize for this slide. It's rather hard to see, but engagement. Emotional investment. And the other word that you could use here for under engagement is relationship. It's critical for us to have a relationship with our people if we want them to trust us, to respect us, and if we want to be able to guide them in a different direction. Having the conversation with the lady who was part of the clique was only possible because of the kind of relationship we had with her. And if you think of the example of Jesus, Jesus and his disciples are probably the best example of a team. There was a tremendous amount of emotional investment and connection that they had with each other. And Jesus invested much in them. So take the time to know the people on your team. They are people. All people have a story. We're all different. Take the time to know their strengths and weaknesses and their needs. Do you know the needs of the people on your team? Because if you do know the needs of the people on your team, sometimes the responses that they give can make more sense. Or sometimes you might realize that the discussion you're going to have might be painful for this person. And sometimes I have already, prior to a meeting, if I know that something might be difficult for a person to talk about, I've talked to them ahead of time and actually told them, look, this is not about you. I'm going to mention your name. It's not directly about you. But kind of walk them through the process before the meeting actually happened. Again, so it doesn't feel like they're being attacked publicly. So sometimes that can help to do that. Knowing their needs and knowing what they need, helping them through that process. And even just little things. Do you know what it is that the people like on your team? And I'm talking really little things. Do they like Teddy Grahams? Do they like Oreos? Do they like Turkey Hill iced tea? Whatever it might be. We actually have our teachers give us a list of things that they like that. And then we actually try to provide that for them at different points during the year. Something that actually means a lot to them, that they really enjoy. A fresh pot of coffee. Whatever it might be. Cloud says, when we are emotionally and relationally connected to others, stress levels in the brain diminish. Put simply, relationships change brain chemistry. When we have good relationships with people, it changes what's going on up in our heads. And do you think better things happen at work or at church? Absolutely. When we're emotionally and relationally connected to others, stress levels diminish. And Cloud says it's not enough to avoid toxic relationships. We actually have to build positive ones. He also says that one CEO, what if one of the policies that he sent out, or that he kind of had, I'm not sure if it was a written policy or just an understood policy, but if you have a bad attitude, don't bother coming to work. And so, because so having a bad attitude is kind of like having the flu. It's likely going to affect the other team members. It's something that's contagious. So don't bring it. Just call in sick. Take the time to engage your team members individually. Again, one of the first things that was most profound in this book for me, Cloud said that people start businesses and they have this idea that they want to accomplish. For my wife and I, we had a vision for starting a school in an urban setting. What we didn't anticipate is the amount of time that we spend helping people interact well with each other. And when I read one of the first chapters in the book, it says, that's the plight of people who start a business. They have this great idea that they want to pursue, but then when it really comes down to it, they spend all their time just getting the people to get along with each other. And I'm not sure exactly what percentage of my time I spend doing that, but there are some days when I spend most of them in meetings with people, again, to try and help them get along with each other. But that's part of what leaders have to do. And again, part of that is actually being willing to meet with them individually. It takes time. It takes commitment. And relationships aren't pretty. And the fact that the reasons why they don't get along, if you actually get involved in that, there aren't necessarily easy answers to get to the next place with it. My idea of withdrawing relational capital, when we invest in a person relationally, it's easier to confront them and say, look, what you're doing is not okay. So there was recently an incident where one of our teachers was jaywalking. They were walking the kids across a very busy street when there was not a light, when there was not a walk sign. And now, we tell our teachers, it's okay if you do that. That might not be a good idea, but you can take that risk. As a school, though, as a school employee, it's not okay for you to cross the street when the light is not on. If there's an accident and one of our children are hurt, that's a serious liability. That is not okay. So part of the reason it's easier for me to have that conversation with my staff is it's not just whenever I say, whenever I knock on their door or send them an email or text, whatever it might be, and ask for a meeting, it's not always about something negative. And so that's the kind of culture you have to have. They have to have that positive interaction with you so that you have the relational capital to actually address the issues that need to be addressed. So being willing to spend individual time with them. Engaging as a team. So encourage engagement, sometimes force it. When we do this sometimes at our board meetings, our board chairman will do this. We also do this with our staff sometimes. If we're just not getting any momentum on the issue and people are not speaking, we'll simply stop and say, look, I want all of you to speak into this. We're going around the table. And so in a sense, force engagement. At our board meetings, sometimes we do this because we really want to hear what all of the board members have to speak into this. Because sometimes, a lot of times, our boards are fairly discussion-oriented. So who gets their word spoken? The person who has them, you know, ready to speak, and some people are more slow to speak, which is good. We need all the different pieces to make a good team. Again, sometimes in our board meeting, we will go around the circle and ask for people's input so that we actually get all of the issues on the table and get all of the opinions on the table. Because again, that's what I believe is the power of working in teams, is that you have a variety of pieces of wisdom that taken together can actually take you to a better place. The other thing that as leaders we need to do, I think, is to actually welcome feedback. And that's partly a culture you have to develop. But welcome people to say that, you know, what you did in that meeting or what you did in this situation was not okay. And part of the reason that we were able to realize that we had significant staff relational problems, I was aware that they were happening, but we had staff who were willing to come and say, look, we have a problem. And if you're not open to that, if you don't have the time to listen to that, then they're not going to come to you. So you have to be willing to get that feedback. And sometimes it comes back to you as a leader. It's something you as a leader are doing wrong. I like to say this. I've had the gift of having people come to me and say, "Look, you've really hurt me." I've had that happen on a number of occasions, which really dramatically shifted the way I try to do things. And sometimes as leaders, we can easily run over people because of, you know, we know if if you're driven to do something and you know the direction you want the organization to go, sometimes we can run over people. But again, welcoming feedback in that situation is more likely to encourage people to engage in the situation. But then you have, again, on the bottom... how many of you have read Bartleby the Scrivener? Oh, too bad. It's a fascinating story. It's rather dry, but it's a story about Herman Melville. And I read it with my students many years ago when I was teaching in a Mennonite school. But Bartleby the Scrivener, his answer to everything when he's asked to do something, I'd prefer not to. And so that's the answer that he gives to everything. And there is no developing a relationship with Bartleby the Scrivener. I'd prefer not to. That's his answer to everything. And sometimes we have team members that will say the same thing. I'd prefer not to. I'd prefer not to engage. And sometimes we have to be... Sometimes if I know that a staff member has an opinion, but I know that they're not going to be willing to share it in a group, I'll actually ask them ahead of time, so what is your view on this? To actually get them to express it, to maybe then express it for them, or to actually, if they know their answer ahead of time, they're more likely to be able to share it in a meeting, especially if I encourage them to share it. But again, it's spending that one-on-one time. And it's developing the right kind of culture. How many of you are in ministry or in missions in your team settings? See, one of the problems. So how many of you are more? How many of you deal with teams from a business perspective? Okay, so some of both. So here's one of the differences in ministry. It's a little bit hard for us to think about firing people. Is it even okay to fire people in a ministry setting? I'm not going to try to answer that question because it's complicated. Because we are supposed to care for these people. And sometimes tough love, the best thing is to have them leave. But in a business setting, I think the answer is a little bit more clear cut. If this person is not doing their job, then they need to move on. I think in our mission mindset, we need to be more willing to have that happen as well, to move people on. But it can be a little bit difficult. Affirmation. Allowing individuality, I'm actually going to Now I'll get to this in the next slide. Allowing individuality, giving people space to use their gifts. So sometimes when I see my teachers in their classroom, I'm like, why are they doing that? Or I walk past and the classroom is just an absolute mess. The kids are just really loud. We have a daycare, so it does tend to be that way. But why don't they have more order in their classroom? You go past the next classroom and it's not nearly as much of a mess. However, in the one classroom where that happens, the kids actually are very creative. The teacher is very good at teaching them creativity and in getting them to do some really amazing things. Do I want to squelch that and say, look, you can't have that many toys and that much stuff laying on the floor. It just looks bad. No. I would suggest you need to allow that individuality. And in a business sense, sometimes just allowing people to develop their ideas, or again, the feedback idea, being willing to allow people to give you a different idea so that you can shift what your organization or a team may be doing. So allowing the individuality and empowering people to follow their giftings. Because if I answer, and the other thing that I've learned as a leader is that it's much better to ask questions. It depends on the person you're dealing with. Sometimes people just want to be told what to do. But sometimes I've told people what to do, and they react pretty violently. They don't really want to hear it. So with some people, it's much more effective to ask them questions. Now, it's much more difficult, because how are you going to ask them questions to get to the right place? But my wife and I do a lot of this together in thinking about how to work with people. And so asking the right questions can actually get people to a better place sometimes. When you ask them to think about how they really feel they should deal with this situation. So going back to the click situation, we actually, some of the conversation is, how do you think this should be resolved? And asking questions rather than giving answers. So one of the ways that I have found to actually increase some of the positive things in our team, and you can react to this if you want to, but I will suggest that Jesus, when he sent out the disciples, I'm not going to take, if you look at Matthew 10, where he sends out the disciples, he actually tells them all kinds of negative things are going to be happening. You're going to go to places people are not going to accept you, and that's okay, just leave them. And he tells them there will be attacks, they will potentially be scourged, imprisoned. This is not going to be easy. But it's Jesus, so they've been following him, they've been seeing Jesus do these things, and he ramps it up for them and sends them out. And he doesn't go with them, but he sends them out. So he raises the bar and he increases their responsibility. We've had, and actually this goes back to some of our female staff relationships, we've actually asked some of our senior teachers to become mentors to our newer teachers. one of our board members suggested that we should do that. And when I talked to my wife about that, when they suggested, I laughed at them, which is, of course, not a nice thing to do, but that's what I did. Because I was like, well, that will just never work because they have relationship issues themselves. What was really fascinating, and the reason we ended up pursuing it, is they're like, wait, maybe they'll rise to the occasion and they'll actually begin to see things from a different perspective. And that's exactly what has happened. So these people have actually risen to a very different level, personally and professionally, and in the team setting, because we've given them more responsibility, and they actually end up interacting with people differently and in a better way. It's really amazing. I'm going to say just a little bit before I get to the mission part. I'll keep that fairly short, but. So when we were gearing up for our faculty retreat, I already started with that story, so I kind of need to finish that one, I feel. But again, we have 16 staff members, and we knew we have this clique, we had some other relational issues, and so our administrative team met. My wife and I talked about this till almost midnight, and my wife and I are not late people. We tend to be in bed, pretty much asleep by 10 o'clock. We're talking till almost midnight and thinking about, okay, what in the world are we supposed to do? The staff retreat's about 3 days away. And if we let this elephant in the room, are we even going to have an effective faculty retreat? Because one of our goals is to build a stronger team. It's to allow times of social interaction during the time at the retreat. But it's also to think about where we're going as an organization, think about things we can change. So do we need to completely shift the direction of the weekend because people are feeling these relational pressures? we didn't feel we could adequately make a decision about it. So, first of all, we spent a lot of time praying, but we also asked our administrative team to get together the next night, Thursday night, and we need to figure out whether we're changing the direction of the weekend. Because I haven't talked to many or many people who have been willing to get, you know, 16 people together, mixed setting, guys and girls, and actually talk about significant relationship issues. And so one of the administrative team members said, well, that's just crazy. It's not something you do, because it's just not going to work. After we met for 3 hours, we ended up concluding that, you know what? We can either ignore the issue and hope it goes away, and we're pretty sure it's not going to, or we can address it head on and invite people to actually talk about these issues in a public setting. We had no idea where it was going to go. Again, I felt like I was in over my head. But I believe I have had a lot of faith that God was going to do good things, and I had a lot of trust in the maturity level of our staff members, of our team members. We actually did shift the direction of the weekend, and instead of talking about things related to school, we actually talked about our team culture, team relational culture. And it was really amazing to see what God did, to see the way he worked, and to see the kinds of things that people were willing to share. So, being willing to shift course is sometimes good. One of the things that's important to us, one of the questions that I had in the description was, how do we bring new people on board, and how do we help them to figure out what's going on? We need to have a mission statement and be clear about, here's where we as an organization are going. So it needs to be stated. One of the things that we did in the past, I think it was 2 years ago, we actually wrote a staff handbook. And part of the reason we did that is we were adding about 5 staff members that fall. And the question is, okay, how do we adequately tell these people what's expected of them? So we ended up writing about a 35-page document to try and communicate what we believe. It was a grueling amount of work. We probably spent over 100 hours, about 3 of us, working on that staff handbook. But it is a work that was definitely worthwhile. It helps us to actually communicate and pass on our values to our people. So that's something I would highly encourage, and I'm guessing most of you have that, but we actually go back to that handbook and revise it almost every year to try and make sure that we're actually communicating what happens in our organization. Again, fairly basic. So now what? Again, in conclusion, we need to get people to trust each other. We need to get to the place where our teams will trust us as leaders. We need to ask them, invite them, sometimes force them to engage, but also affirming who they are as people, and even knowing who they are as people, and then having a mission statement. So, any quick questions or critiques? Yes?
You said about getting everyone to give their opinion, or getting everyone to talk. Do you ever get them to write it down?
Yes, I have done, because actually, depending on the issue, we've sent out an email or a survey so that they can respond anonymously. So it kind of depends on the nature of the issue. Or sometimes, yes, that is a good way to do it.
One thing that can happen is the first person
gives,
and everyone else sort of
follows. Yes, that can easily happen. Yes.
I agree wholeheartedly with the trust is so critical, but if you as a leader or any one of us damages trust in some way as a leader, how do you recover from that, and what are some steps to take in regaining that trust of your students, employees, or team members?
Anybody have a quick response to that? I need to end. Yes.
Saying I'm sorry has worked good for me.
That was one of the I was actually in a workshop yesterday. One of the things that we as leaders need to do is be willing to say, look, I've messed up. I made a mistake. And that goes a long way towards rebuilding trust.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.